Hello and welcome to Shame Spiral. I'm Ellie Kremendahl, a psychotherapist turned comedian, and this is the podcast where I low-key use my therapy background to interview guests about all things shame. I was so excited to spiral out this week with Nori Reed. Nori is a Los Angeles-based comedian, writer, and actress originally from Kentucky. Most recently, Nori wrote for seasons 5 and 6 of Disney's Raven's Home and created Disney Channel's first ever live-action trans character, which is so cool, and led to a very well-deserved GLAAD Award nomination. She's amazing. She was featured in New York Magazine as one of Vulture's comedians you should know and will know in 2021. If you don't already know of her, you have been sleeping on her. She is so funny. Her stand-up has been on Showtime, Netflix is a Joke, Comedy Central. Go check Nori out. You will not regret it. She is so funny. She makes me laugh so hard. And I had so much fun talking to her. She's such an interesting person. We had some unexpected and hilarious to both of us points of connection. And I'm so excited to share the episode with you. My little shame spiral for this week. It's such a tiny moment, but it's a big shame. So I had a friend staying at my place and whatever, I made pasta or something. And then I used sauce from a jar because who has time for that? And I put it in the recycle. And then a little bit later, my friend was like, oh, Ellie, I think, you know, I didn't know this for a while, but maybe you don't know that you actually have to like really rinse out the jars before you recycle them, or they'll just throw them in the trash. And here's the thing, you guys. I did know. Of course I know that. Of course I know that. It's 2023. We all know what you need to do to recycle something effectively. And I didn't do it because I was just tired. And just in that moment, I was lazy. Of course I thought about the climate. Of course I thought about my personal responsibility as a proponent of climate justice and also living on this planet. But then, you know what it was? In that moment, I was just like, what the fuck difference does this jar make? We're all going to die. That's the kind of sort of existential pathos / nihilism that sometimes comes up for me in my darkest or most exhausted moments. So the shame was that I lied about it. Instead of just being like, oh my God, I know I was being so lazy, let me rinse it out, I was like, oh my God, really? So stupid. And so it was actually a double shame because of course I had shame about being a bad recycler / a bad citizen of the planet. And then I had the shame about lying to my friend about it, who totally wouldn't have judged me. It's such a human thing to do, I think, to just occasionally be like, I'm tired. I'm going to do the lazy, selfish, bad thing. So yeah, but you know what? This is how shame is useful because I have been rinsing out jars with a fierce dedication ever since. So sometimes, you know, when we feel shame and we don't really deserve to feel it, it's terrible. But sometimes shame is really helpful in making you reflect on like, yeah, that's not the kind of person I want to be. So let me not do that again. So that's good. And that is all I have today. Oh, one more thing, actually. Nori has an upcoming show on August 13th in Seattle. If any of you guys live in Seattle or the surrounding area, it's at Hereafter. It's going to be so good. And you can get tickets on Nori's Instagram at Nori Reed. So check it out. Go see her. You will be so happy that you did. And let's get into it. So without further ado, let's start spiraling with Nori Reed.
Shame burning in my brain. Always in a frame, and I've only myself to blame. Shame, wishing I could forget my name and crawl back up from where I came. I'm going down the spiral once again. The shame spiral.
You were just saying that you accidentally lost some money. Do you want to, why don't you just like reshare?
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's so fresh. It's so fresh and so niche. And it's like to ask the listeners for compassion for something so privileged as I start this podcast is incredible. But I'm going to Japan on Monday, which is a blessing and a privilege. And I've never been, and I'm so excited. And I've kind of been putting a lot of my anxiety into the like pre-planning and like, because it's never about the thing. It's never about the actual thing that's happening. It's about the anxiety around it. But I was like, oh, I gotta get Japanese currency before I go, because they tell you, like, you know, get the currency before you leave so that you don't have to exchange it at the airport, because they charge you an arm and a leg. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. So I went to the Bank of America. Boo. Just want to go ahead and say boo there. Went to Bank of America and exchanged it. And when I got home, I realized that they had taken about like $100. And I was like, what's happening? And then I looked it up and it was like, oh no, for Japan, you definitely want to exchange it there. And I was like, oh, cool. Like the one, just like this, like one exception.
Yeah.
So I'm fixating on it. It's not a big deal. I think just even telling you now in this moment, it has kind of released the what it means to me. But I'm a frugal bitch.
Yeah. I mean, the fixation part, I'm so curious about, like, what's the script that immediately started playing in your brain about this $100? And like, how were you? I'm imagining you were crucifying yourself for it in some way.
Oh my God. And what hurts so much is that I've been so like nickel and diming myself, like for every, like for the hotels and stuff. I'm like, oh, this one's $40 less. So let me move mountains to get this like $40 deal and to put all of that effort into that. And then kind of, you know, those savings be gone in a blink of an eye. It produces shame. Mm-hmm. I'll bring that into this. There's some shame there.
Are you kind of like, that was so stupid of me? Like, why did I not do more research? Yeah. Like, how does it become shameful?
Yes. Why didn't I look it up? I should have looked it up. Yeah. Anytime I feel stupid, that's an enormous point of shame for me, I think. Anytime I feel foolish or maybe even also taken advantage of, I think that's also some sort of, that's in there somewhere.
That's wrapped up in it. So it's hit you on multiple points. Like you've been sort of taken advantage of and it was dumb to do what you did.
Right. And it's such a waste of the incredible exchange rate that's happening with US and Japan right now.
Yeah.
It is a lost opportunity that would have been amazing. But
Yeah. Do you have shame stuff in general about like money and class and stuff like that? Just kind of from little bits of what you already said.
Yeah. I feel like I've been in so much therapy. I've been in therapy since I was in college, and I feel like I never talk about money or class in therapy, which is so, that's what's coming up for me right now. It's like, wow, I never talk about this in therapy, which is so funny to me. I haven't really unpacked kind of a lot of that stuff, but I grew up very working class in Kentucky. So, I would say like lower middle class kind of, I don't know, words now, I feel like things have changed. I don't know what things mean anymore, but we definitely like counted pennies and, you know, everything was definitely like, had to be decided on. There was no kind of, you know, purchase that wasn't thought about. And then I went to a really wealthy kind of elite college. Elite's the wrong, it wasn't like Ivy League, but I went to like a liberal arts school that a lot of rich kids went to. So that was like a huge culture shock.
Uh-huh. Which school did you go to?
I really regret saying elite. When I said elite, I was like, no, people are going to be so mad when I said it's because people are going to be like, okay, like Harvard. I'm like, no.
I have a guess. Or
like Cornell. And I'm like, not even actually. What is it?
My guess is Oberlin.
I went to the sister school of Oberlin. I went to Kenyon.
Oh my God.
Which is, okay. Yeah, it's like the same thing.
Okay.
How did you know?
I just was I
giving
you.
Off like a Lena Dunham kind of a vibe?
No, I would never say that about you. No, but I did read you to filth just a little tiny bit. So that was a big culture shock.
Yes, yeah, like my freshman year, my roommate, he went to like the top like boarding school in like the country, and I just was like, where am I? Like this is crazy. I went to some like stupid little school. Like it was like really. Like not a good school. Mm-hmm. Like I went to a Christian school. They taught like creationism for science. So it was crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was just like such a culture shock of being like, oh my God, now there's all this like, I've never heard of Patagonia, the brand. I was like North Face, Patagonia. I was like, what is the like, what is with the mountaineering? Is everyone going to climb a mountain? Like when are we climbing
that
a mountain today?
So funny. Oh my God.
There's a lot of that. I had to learn all of that stuff.
Yeah, there's like a rich way to signal staying warm. It's so strange.
Like a rich way of being like, if the elements were to come right now, I would survive and you would die.
Yeah, it's gross.
Like that's the vibe. Like if there was a snowstorm right now, I would live, bitch. That's kind of the vibe.
And my performance fleece. So did you like, you know, and now you grew up like working class in Kentucky and now you're a successful TV writer. Like, do you have shame stuff about like surpassing your family in that kind of way or like upward mobility, like any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I would say yes and no. I mean, I think there's a level of pride. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of pride, I think, for where I've come from. But I've also, maybe I have shame. I haven't really unpacked it. It's interesting. There's so many things in my life that I've talked about incessantly in therapy. Like, mm-hmm. the point of like, oh my God, I can't talk about this anymore. And this is like an area that I haven't really processed privately, even.
Okay.
But
I'll stop asking you about it because you haven't even talked about it with yourself yet.
Yeah. It's, you know, those things when a celebrity puts out a statement and they're like, can I just have some privacy right now? I'm like, can I just have a little bit of privacy as I figure out the shame I have around my finances?
Absolutely.
No, but I will say this is that the Japan trip meant a lot to me personally because the way that I was able to casually just be like, oh, I'm going to go. This is what I want to do. I want to go to Japan. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to just make those decisions without stressing about like my bank account. Like that's to me, that's a huge moment. And I allowed myself to feel that yesterday. Where I was like, oh, wow. Because I'm doing it for my birthday. And I was like,
oh, cool.
I was like, damn. I was like, you've worked really hard. And that's cool that you can do that. I'm not mm-hmm. sure how this is going to connect to listeners. I'm not sure.
I don't think you should worry about that. I think it's pretty relatable.
I care about the listeners.
I love that. And I also care about you listeners, but I think that like the topical piece about Japan, like I get what you're saying. It's like, how can you relate to like someone being able to just go on a vacation to Japan? But the piece around like what happened for you around wasting that money or whatever, that is really relatable. And it's a big deal when you grow up without money to be like, I can do this thing for myself without like agonizing about it or going into credit card debt. Like, that's beautiful.
Yeah. I I'm realizing now too that I think the shame is actually more about my community or like being trans. Like I feel like I have a joke I do about being trans rich and how isolating that is because all my trans friends are trans poor. And that joke 100% comes from shame. That's a shame joke. Yeah. So I definitely that is something I can definitely that is present with me is that feeling of like, oh God, like my friend who I love so dearly, I made her go with me. Okay, I'm being a little harsh on myself. I did not make her go, but
okay,
she went with me to get my first ever like designer bag, and she like is so poor. And like, I'm like looking back on that, I'm like, oh, that was funny, because we laugh about it and we talk about it and we laugh, and she reassures me that she was so happy to go, and that it was a really fun time. But it's just moments like that where it's like, okay, this is interesting. This is something.
Are you afraid of what other people, like especially your trans friends who don't have as much as you, like what they're thinking about you, or more like you just feel guilty that you have what you have?
I do fear judgment a little bit. I think like, you know, like I'm a democratic socialist and I kind of like hate like wealthy people in a way. And so to have this like, to have these like beliefs and morals and then to then make do behavior that is, there's some cognitive dissonance there that I think is created. Where my Tinder profile used to say I'm a democratic socialist who likes nice things. Because that I think that does kind of sum me up pretty well. But no, I mean the internet can be a really vicious place and I'm kind of constantly terrified of being called out for something. It can be a lot, for sure.
Yeah. Yes, it can. People can be very ungenerous and everyone's just like vomiting their anger and rage in all kinds of places it doesn't belong.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just so interesting because the more I'm afraid of judgment, the more I lean into like my like the way that I handle my shame is such a strange, I don't quite understand it myself. You're a therapist, so maybe you might understand it more than I can, but there's like a reaction to the shame by like flaunting it even more. There's like a, okay, I feel shame about it, so let me, I don't know if that's like a public flogging of, so I don't know if it's like a self-punishment or something, but if something makes me feel ashamed, I almost like, I want to even say it louder because.
Yep. Yeah.
And I don't know what that is.
That's such a core sort of defense, like adaptively defensive reaction, you know, to try to kind of cope with it is to like loudly do the opposite of hide it. You know, I do that too. I've been having all these feelings about aging lately and I've been writing this like blurry of jokes just about how like old and disgusting I am.
And it's too. Like,
my biggest fear at shows, is all these young people being like, ew, she's so old. And instead, like, I'm dealing with that by just, yeah, making it like, I can't tolerate the thought of them quietly thinking it. So I'm just talking about it all the time. You've been having that too.
I literally just wrote a joke that was, the only thing more tragic than a trans woman is an aging trans woman. And no one laughs. No one thinks that's for me. Like that joke is for me because it just is such a something I, you know, just being in the industry and like it is, it's so cliche, but it's so real the way that I have like, I did not even realize the level of self-loathing that I was having until it came out. And, like, I had to go to therapy and be like, it was like uncovered how much of the self-hating was happening. Because it's just such a toxic industry in terms of the, and I'm not saying anything new here. It's just the fixation on youth and beauty. And, it has definitely taken a toll because for me, the pandemic has aged me so much. And I'm sure a lot of people relate to that. That's something we kind of all went through. But I look at my face in the mirror and I'm like, I can just see the way that the pandemic has just this wrinkle and this wrinkle and this gray hair and this, you know, and it's definitely something I fixate on for sure.
Me too. I obsess. Do you have anxiety? Are you like, do you have like obsessive anxious thoughts kind of stuff?
Yes. Yeah. I've never been diagnosed with like OCD or anything, but I definitely am an extremely anxious person.
Me too.
Yeah.
The fixating, you know what I sometimes think about with the fixating is I had a therapist once who told me that, like, you know, when you're a highly anxious person and there's this constant sense of like threat and danger inside of you, that in an attempt to stabilize that, the anxiety just finds whatever little home it can because that actually feels safer. So I think about that a lot because I'll be obsessing too about like a new wrinkle that I find that I'm like, can't believe I had never seen on my face before. And I'm like, did it happen overnight? Like, it's just going to get worse. Like, have I been walking around and not noticing it? Whatever. I think it's just like, that's the little home because the abject terror is worse. And sometimes that helps me to think about it like that.
100%. And before like any big performance, I hyper fixate on my outfit / like overall appearance. Like that's like, it's like the dress is not good enough or the, you know, this makeup isn't working or it's so clearly a transference of anxiety. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I dropped out of school to be a therapist.
What? You did?
Yeah. So I started comedy after I dropped out of school.
Oh, where you were studying to be a therapist.
Yeah.
Were you getting your master's? Like it was like
a... Yes, I was getting an MFT, a marriage family therapist in San Francisco.
That's where I got mine.
Oh, where?
At CIIS.
Me too!
Shut the fuck up. I knew you were going to say that because of the whole...
Me too.
Overland crunchy vibes. Yes. Which program were you in? Okay, just for listeners too, this is about to be extremely niche content. It's about a hippie therapy school in San Francisco. This is wild. Okay, which program, Nori? Which program?
Before I say the program, and again, this is for the listeners here, just to give you a quick anecdotal sense of what we're talking about.
Oh my God.
The printers broke one day. And someone was like, did anyone put Onyx on it?
Shut the fuck up. I believe it 100%.
Literally, they're like, why didn't anyone put Onyx on the printers? And it was like, what? And people were barefoot. People didn't wear socks or shoes.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. I have more context. Oh, you were in ICP. ICP.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so I was in drama therapy, which was one of the crunchiest. I mean, because it's like theater kids who decide to become therapists. Drama therapy, baby. And there were pillows instead of chairs in a lot of classrooms. Thinking about what you shared too. Like there was just a constant flow of hummus in the little cafe. And I multiple times saw people cry and say they were triggered about an assignment and then they didn't have to do it. And instead, the whole group like processed it in a group dynamics way. Fucking craziness.
Literally, I went for almost a year. And then I was like, actually, because it's funny, I went wanting a transformative experience and then realized I was just trans and that could be my transformative experience. I was like, oh, actually, mm-hmm. I have a built-in program that I need to do. Mm-hmm. So then I wrote a letter to get my money back. So they were very intense about money. For hippies, they were pretty intense about money, I'll say that.
Yep.
But to get my money back, I had to write a letter that was like, I'm trans. I had to come out first to the loan office. That was the first person I had to come out to. And oh be like, God. Hey, loan office, I'm trans, so I need my money back, or I'll sue. I didn't say I'll sue, but I kind of alluded to the fact of being like, you know, this is a protected class. I was like,
you gotta do that sometimes.
sometimes you have to do that, and they did give me my money back, but I cannot believe we went to the same. It's so niche. It's wild that we went to the same. It's.
I need to know what time period. When were you there?
Yeah. I was there 2014, I believe.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was long gone. I went from 2007 to 2009.
Nice. I took a long ambling path there from undergrad. So I definitely I did a lot of work in like counseling before I decided to go to grad school. I just wanted to go, basically I wanted to go to the San Francisco and I just needed an excuse that my,
me too.
Do you do IFS?
I know it. I don't do it. Internal family systems.
Yeah. Thank you. So like, it's kind of the belief that we're made up of parts, and there's a part of me that I call Coach, who's kind of like, he's like this Russian coach, like a gymnast coach, and he's like, he's like, Nori, you wasted $100. That's crazy for you. Uh-huh. I'm doing the accent. That's so problematic. I'm like, I'm literally doing the accent.
It's okay. It's okay to do a Russian accent. That's fine.
That's okay. I think that's okay these days.
I think so. I think you're punching up. Yeah.
I'm punching up, but I needed an excuse to get myself to the Bay Area that would appease Coach. And then once we got there, then I was like, I'm dropping out, bitch. I'm trans.
Oh my God. I love it so much. I had a little bit of a similar thing because I was like an active alcoholic, not in recovery. I was in New York City waitressing and like doing theater and writing and stuff. And I was like, I gotta fix my alcoholism and my life. And I was like, I'll be a therapist because I was doing all this like therapeutic, like casually therapeutic theater. And then, but I really just wanted to go be like young and queer in San Francisco, I realized later. And so I did, but then I did become a therapist and now I'm a comedian and I only do like a tiny little bit of therapy as my day job. But
I think it's so cliche, but like people have to understand that therapists are crazy. Crazy. Every therapist you go, like if you're ever scared of like, oh, is my therapist judging me or like they're so perfect? No, like people become therapists because either they're crazy or their family was crazy. To me, those are the two, or both.
100%. Often both. And then the only therapist, well, that's hyperbolic, but the kind of therapist that freaks me out the most are the, both as like colleagues and recipient, is the ones that are like highly, like truly seem highly together and like don't seem to relate to anything. I'm like, you are hiding an ocean of agony. And it's really disturbing to me because no one is like, no well-adjusted person without like a gritty history wants to do that work unless they just want to like save everybody and help people. And I find that so disturbing, just so disturbing.
That's so interesting. And it immediately for me brings up the couples therapist on Showtime.
Orna.
Yes. Like I'm obsessed with her.
Me too.
But she seems really put together. And then I'm like, wait a second. But then I feel like she's open about the fact that she does come from a lot of like war trauma or something, or.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. And I think it's subtle because it's not that I like want a therapist to show up looking like they just rolled out of bed or be like have bad boundaries or anything. Like I want them to be a good therapist and be like professional. But it's more like when you get an energetic sense from someone that they've like lived some shit and they're like have worked through it and that they don't have a perspective of like, and I'm healed now, because no one is ever all healed. Like they're just in, they're vulnerable, no. They're in it. And I feel like Orna is like an amazing therapist, but like when you see her talk to her supervisor, like shit gets stirred up for her. She's not one of those people where she's so composed that you're like, I'll never impact you, where that's really like not human, you know, to be that together that you can't be. Yeah.
Yes. I oftentimes feel really privileged to have friends that are therapists because I get to see like just how much of a real person they are. Because of the code switching that probably has to happen when they're with clients. But yeah, I love seeing just how normal therapists are. Like they're just like us people.
They are just like us. They are.
Depressed.
Depressed, angsty, all of it. Like I think I tweeted about this recently, but I had a terrible psychiatrist who told me that to deal with my anxiety, this is a direct quote, that I should watch something funny and light before bed, like Everybody Loves Raymond. And this was like a few years ago. I know. And I was like, you?
That's
unethical.
That's psychotic.
It's psychotic.
Unethical. I'd say report them to the, what's the board that you report them to?
For a psychiatrist, probably like the American Medical Association. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you need to report them to the American Medical Association.
I can't.
Because that's
some bullshit.
Unethical is the right word.
Yeah, it's fucked up. Maybe it works for her. I don't know. Okay, so I love chatting with you so far. This is such a good conversation. I'm going to pivot us into a little game that I play with all my guests. It's called the Shame Game.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'm going to present you with two scenarios, and I want you to think about which would make you have a bigger shame spiral, and then we can kind of process why. All right, here's scenario one. So you just finished a draft of a new pilot you're very excited about. It's like, you're like, this is the best thing I've ever written. You're so proud of it. And you've worked very hard. You send it to your managers. So, you know, this is like your 10th draft and you're finally sharing it with your managers, you know, and you can't wait to hear their thoughts. And then they respond to each other talking about your pilot and they accidentally CC you. I know. Whatever they say hits on like your biggest fears about yourself as a writer. So whether it's like, I see what she's trying to do, but like, I just don't think she has that capacity. Like, this is not good. Like, or whatever it is for you. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of it. Then you obviously have to like do
something
about it. I'm
about to leave this podcast. I have to go. I have to get out of here.
I'm so sorry.
I'm triggered.
This is too much. I know.
I'm triggered. I'm activated. I can't even imagine the second one. I can't even.
The second one's bad too.
Okay.
Okay. The second one is similar.
Oh my God.
Different version in terms of whatever really gets at your shame. Okay. So same essential premise, new pilot. You're so excited about it. You are dating someone new who you like so much. And they are like, can you like, I really want to read your writing. Like, please, like, I want to be close to you. Just like, let me read what you're working on so hard. And you're like, no, hell no. And they really just convince you. They're like, it'll make me feel closer to you, whatever. And I can't stress enough that you are so into this person. You're like, I am going to marry this fucking person. I love them. But it's like, you know, 3 months in or something. And then you share the pilot that you're convinced is your greatest work. And then they text their friend, like their best friend. And they're like, oh, I just read Nori's pilot. I don't know what to do. I hated it. Like, can I really be with someone I feel like I might be smarter than? Like, blah, 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 blah. And then obviously they text that to you by mistake. So which one is worse?
Wow. I literally mindlessly opened a new tab and went into that tab because I was so filled with anxiety from this prompt because it's so crazy.
You had to leave. You had to you had to psychologically leave the room in whatever way you could.
I had to disassociate because it was so painful.
Nori, that's so how painful sorry.
This prompt is. And that's a that's me complimenting. No, that's a compliment because this game is
fucked
so
up.
Salacious and devilish and I love it. Okay, I think anyone would say that both are equally so bad.
Yeah.
What's going to be the deciding factor for me is that historically I've dated really stupid people. Mm. And so their opinion might kind of mean a little less to me. And I feel like the manager agent thing was so highly triggering. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like in the industry we're I'll speak from the I instead of the we. I'll speak from the we. It's like you're just there's always a question mark of what's being said about you in rooms that you're not in because so many conversations are happening where someone will report back, oh my God, I was talking to so-and-so, they love you, or there's a lot of like, they said this or they said that. So
yeah.
Final answer, both are so horrible and terrifying. The first one is just kind of pulling through by a hair.
Okay. Yeah. And what would that shame spiral look like for you if that first one happened? Like, what would flash through your mind? How would it come out in your behavior?
I'd probably like have a lot of anxiety about what to do. Mm-hmm. What do I do? I'm conflict avoidant. So what does conflict look like? And this is something I would be obsessing over. Or I have a really intense defense system. Thank you, coach. Mm-hmm. So actually, coach might shut it all down and be like, what the fuck do they know? They're idiots. They're so mm-hmm. stupid. Mm-hmm. You're smart. They're dumb. So that might kick in.
Okay. And that would be helpful. Yeah, that would get you through.
Maybe. Helpful, but also, you know, those defense systems have not always been helpful. I'll say that. But yeah.
I know. And then also those defensive systems can block you from having whatever feelings you need to have underneath. They're sort of pulling you up and throwing cold water in your face, you know? But also, it's like, if that was like the thing you're proudest of, and you're at a point, I'm imagining, in your career where even if it's not always, you probably have some sense of like, I'm good at, like, I know when something I've written is strong. So it's like, maybe your managers like don't know what they're fucking talking about. You know what I mean? Like, that's also possible. So coach could be right in that situation.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I totally see that too. Coach is just very reactive.
So I feel really bad that the scenarios were so brutal. Thank you for being a good sport in them. And let's move on to the shame story that you brought.
Yeah. I'm going to tell a story about little Nori, and she's in high school. Okay. Mm-hmm. Senior year, living in the world as, you know, a boy. Okay. Mm-hmm. A closeted twink, if you will, just to paint a little picture. And I went to a Christian high school. So grew up very religious. And so for our senior year trip, we did a mission trip to Costa Rica. And it was so crazy to the point of we were even trying to convert Catholics into Protestants, which I thought was, looking back, I think that's ridiculous.
Wow.
So that was the trip. And then on the trip, you know, I was already, even though I was so deep in the closet and kind of growing up religious as a queer person is such a unique kind of trauma, and not as in unique to me, but just as in such a horrible experience. And a part of you kind of has to buy into it for survival. But there's mm-hmm. the part of you that also knows that it's kind of stupid. And there's that, again, cognitive dissonance that's happening in your head, which can be quite painful. So even though I was going through all the motions and doing everything I needed to do to be a part of this mission trip and fit in and whatever, there still was that part of me that was like, this is really stupid. And why are we doing this? And this doesn't even make sense. And I remember one day back at the hotel, we were staying at this like very, you know, basic kind of hotel. In the lobby, there was a group of seniors, and you could immediately tell that they were from somewhere cool. Because, like, we mm-hmm. I'm from Kentucky, from, like, a small town. I could immediately tell they were from, like, New York or, like, LA or, like, it was just such a clear. Mm-hmm. And then one of them looked at me. He was a really cute boy, and he looked at me, and immediately that eye contact, it's so crazy how, like, with queer people, just that look, it's like, you know, that the two of you are queer. It's just such a, it's so crazy how it's just like one little look, and you're like, wow, that person's queer, I'm queer, blah, blah, blah. And it was such an awakening for me. Because when he saw me, the way he looked at me, I could tell that he saw me. Like, he saw, like, me and not the person I was having to be to survive. And we didn't really talk to each other. But the last day that I was at the hotel, I got the courage to go up to him and ask him for his, like, name for Facebook. Mm-hmm. I think Facebook had just started. And so when I got home, I added him on Facebook and immediately started chatting and kind of just told him like who I was and how I was gay, but I can't come out because it's so crazy. And he became like the one person who I was out to for like two years. And that became a very intimate relationship just in terms of just like friendship. But I guess the flip side of that is the incredible amount of shame I felt for that friendship. Because I was still in that community that was so violent against queer people and so horrible. So it was definitely that brought up a lot of shame. Do people bring in stories that are like fun and funny, or are they like serious? Because I feel like this one's serious.
This one's serious, but that's okay. No, people bring a real variety. Some are funny and some are not that funny.
Okay.
Or like emotional. Yeah.
Because I just had this I had this moment of like, are you going to be like, oh, people typically are like, oh, I tripped and fell once in front of people.
No, that would be, I try to not bring anyone on the show that would bring me such trash. I want a real story.
Okay. Oh, I forgot one key piece.
Oh, yeah. Tell me.
He was so hot.
Oh, that's important. Yeah.
I needed to make sure people understood that.
I'm so relieved. Like, where I thought the shame was going is that he, like, turned on you at some point and did something horrible. And I'm so relieved that wasn't the end of the story. But, yeah, that's so real, the sort of crazy confluence of, like, it feeling so good to finally be recognized and seen in that way by another queer person. And like in that mirroring, it's such an adolescent necessity. Like to have that kind of mirroring, it helps you become who you fucking actually are. And you yes. can't do that in like a homophobic, transphobic environment.
Yeah.
So that's so beautiful. And then at the same time that like, as you become more you, then it's like the lie. You have to contend with like the fact that you're not being that person and that you're getting all these messages that you shouldn't be that person and that queer people are horrible and all that.
I would literally, after we would like chat on like mm-hmm. AIM or on AOL or whatever we were doing at that time, like I would literally pray. I'd pray to God and ask for mm-hmm. forgiveness because it was Ugh. So... Yeah, because I was so ashamed of, and I was sharing how I actually felt about religion, my community, things with him that I've never said out loud to another person. So it was so, it was such a gift, and also really hard. And also too, the jealousy too of him. Living in such a liberal, I ended up learning that he lived outside of New York. He lived in like a rich suburb of New Jersey or something. Okay. And he ended up went to another Ohio school. But once we got to college, we kind of stopped chatting because we both were just doing our separate things. But anyways, yeah, an enormous amount of guilt for that friendship.
That's so brutal. And that like guilt, shame, joy combo. Yeah.
Yeah. So brutal and also so like I feel like I was the original like young adult gay movie. You know, like I should sue Heartstopper, Call Me by Your Name. All these movies were built on that experience. Because it was so, that like, that kind of like young adult longing to be like writing each other and it's not to be sexual is so, for two like boys, horny boys to just be like chatting is so special and and interesting. Because I don't know if I mentioned this, he was so hot.
Yeah, he was extra hot. What did he? What was his vibe like?
He was really hot.
What kind of hot was he?
He was a lifeguard in the summers, and he wore a Speedo and shaved head. It's like shaved head, super tan. He was giving Hollister when Hollister was the like epitome of hot.
Gotcha.
And I was like, not hot. So it was very like, and I have to think too, like, I'm looking back, I'm like, I wonder what he got out of it. Cause it's an interesting dynamic that he clearly had to have some buy-in for us to be chatting for like 2 years. I don't know.
Is it hard for you to imagine what he was in it for?
No, I mean, I don't think I really thought about it at all from his side while it was happening. But like looking back, I'm like, oh, it's like a liberal, like a really rich kid who lives in a really liberal environment, kind of like providing support to like another queer kid who's living in like a, is it kind of like Doctors Without Borders, but kind of like for like gay teens, or like a Make-A-Wish.
Yeah,
it definitely felt like charity. But no, I think what I'm clearly joking, but I think what I'm trying to articulate is that he clearly got something out of there was some sort, there was something that made him feel good about those interactions as well.
Yeah.
Which is, but I guess looking back, he did share a lot about his own, it must have felt good for him to be seen too, and whatever his truth was as well.
So did that relationship really, did it help you come out really like in a fuller way to yourself and then ultimately
yes.
to everyone? Yeah.
Yes. If I would not have had that friendship, I think my coming out would have been delayed so much. It really helped me first admit to myself that I was queer so that I could tell others. I wonder where Ben, if you're out there, I hope you're on Fire Island right now. And just like really happy.
Oh my God, Ben, I hope you listen to this. And if you do, get in touch. Reach out.
Get in touch, Ben. I need to come out to you a second time.
That's right. You have an update for Ben. Nori, was Ben a little Jewish boy?
Yeah.
Ben from New Jersey is definitely a Jew. Now I have a better picture too. A cute little Jewish boy.
You're like, I actually know this person too.
I went to camp with Ben. I went to camp with Ben. No, I didn't, but I could have.
Because of the ICP thing, okay. There's a lot of crossover.
No, you know what? I could very easily know Ben, but I actually grew up in Illinois, so I'm not part of the East Coast Jew.
I studied abroad in Italy when I was in college, and there was a boy that I was hooking up with on a program. And when I was in LA, this is recently, when I was in LA, I got a text from their phone number that was like, hey, I see that you're in LA. I think we both have a lot of common now because I'm a trans writer too. And so, yes, she transitioned and she's a very successful writer.
Oh my
God. And we're friends. Now we're friends and we hang out and we were like fully hooking up in Call Me By Your Name has been copying my life for years now, and I need to find a lawyer. I'll tell you that.
You do. Mm-hmm. Immediately. That's some IP theft. That's so sweet. I love that reconnection.
Right?
Yeah.
It was such a mind interesting. Whenever we met for the first time, it was like, what is time? I was just like, what is time? Mm-hmm. It was just so interesting.
That's so cool. Wow. Let me ask you a few last questions. This is interesting because you're an internal family systems person. So this might like be not a very strange question for you. But if your shame was kind of concretized into an animal, figure, creature, symbol, anything like that, what's the first thing that pops to your mind?
So any object or thing or
anything. Yeah. Anything to kind of locate it in some sort of physical way. It could also be like a character. It could be anything.
I would say it's like a fly that's just like constantly buzzing. I'm trying to like smack it away, but it just keeps coming back and buzzing in my ear, and I can't kill it, and it's just like always there, especially when I'm sleeping. it's just kind of trying to fall asleep, and there's this fly that's buzzing around my head.
Yeah, I get that. It also makes me think about how flies like love like garbage, you know? And so it's like, it makes sense that like different moments activate the flies more, like would make them swarm. Whereas like other times you might be, you know, not have a big thing coming up that is a whole lot of garbage that attracts the flies.
Yep. That is exactly it.
Can you ever kill it? Like when you think about that, like, do you feel like you ever can like successfully like murder the fly?
I haven't been able to. I think I can sometimes swat it away and it kind of disappears for long periods of time, but it's always going to come back.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to live with that fly forever, but I just have to accept the fly and maybe try to stop killing it and become friends with the fly and kind of see it as the fly trying to tell me something.
Oh my God. This is very San Francisco therapy school.
Yes. I mean, for the amount of therapy I've gone to, thank God I've learned that there is no rejecting anything about yourself or any part of yourself. It's only about accepting and loving. And that's the hardest thing to do is when you learn that the only way to move forward is to love those parts of yourself that you hate. It's powerful and exhausting and a huge feat, a lifelong feat.
I totally agree. I know that that's true. I feel like the reason I even asked you that is coming from my own wish to like deep psychic intrapsychic wish to kill my own fly, you know. But I know that you're right, and accepting it and being like, I live with this here, it also makes it less annoying. Like less, like if a literal fly is buzzing around you and it's all you can think about, it becomes your whole afternoon. But if you're like, yeah, there are flies here, you kind of just accept that they'll be around, then you can focus on so many fucking other things, you know?
There was like a, this is a little woo, this is very woo-woo, and this is going to be very CIS, but there was a moment in my development as a person when I was living in the Bay Area where I think I was on mushrooms and I was in the like one of the parks where the redwoods are, and like I remember just realizing that I'm connected to nature in a way that anytime a bug or an animal or anything is present, it's a messenger for something. There's some sort of message. And ever since looking at it that way, it's been really helpful. Because it's kind of like astrology in the way that it doesn't even matter if it's real or not real. It just brings you to a place of reflection. And totally. So anytime now when there's like for me, when I see a hummingbird, that's a sign always for me that I'm on the right path. That I'm doing the right thing, that I'm on the right path. And same thing with a bug. If a bug is like annoying you or something like that, maybe there's something you need to be focusing on that you're not focusing on. That it's trying to wake you up to something. So I know that's so woo-woo and so like that, but it is something that that brings me a lot of guidance. So
thank you for sharing that. I think that's such a great it is kind of like astrology or tarot cards where it's like projective and it can kind of show you what you need to see. It is so Bay Area, like what is this bug trying to tell me? And it's like, I think so real. It's great.
It's really real to me. I
really get that. I'm a little bit of a low-key witch, And we could talk a lot more about that, but it's very real to me too. I get that kind of thing. Last couple of things before we go. Is there anything that you said today or that I said, or just anything that came up between us that made you feel a little shame spirally in the moment, or that could later if you're debriefing our conversation?
I think like the money talk, the money talk was still, like I said earlier, an area of my life that I haven't really unpacked. So that'll be very interesting to for my next therapy session to talk about. I think my shame story that I shared, I felt shame that it was like not like interesting enough.
What did you tell yourself that made it not interesting enough? What about it? That it wasn't funny or something else?
That it wasn't funny, that it was too serious. I don't know. It's what I came with. So
it's what you came with. It was earnest and it was beautiful, and I feel like it can be hard sometimes, especially when you go on a podcast and you're a comic, like that pressure, like I have to be like funny all the time or something. I don't think that's true. It's certainly not true on this podcast. And I love the story that you brought for what that's worth.
Thank you.
Yeah. How do you feel right now as we're ending our shame journey?
Reflective. Hungry. I'm hungry.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Shame Spiral. You can follow the pod at @PodShameSpiral on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all the usual places. This episode was edited by myself and Sarah Gabrielli, and original music was by Shadwick Wild. Please keep listening and rate and review if you're feeling generous. I have so many exciting guests lined up for our season. Thank you again for joining us, and spiral on, but not too much, okay?